Late Nights with Sarah Jane King.
A few weeks ago, I received an email asking me if I would be able to be in conversation with my book club guest tonight on the show. Martina Dalmans is the author of the soon-to-be-released memoir, A Person My Colour, Love, Adoption and Parenting While White. It's a deeply personal memoir. Speaking about her experience of being an adoptive mother, a white adoptive mother of children who are black, and I was absolutely fascinated by her story, obviously being so similar to my own, but from the perspective of a woke adoptive parent, a woke white adoptive parent too. And so I readily agreed. And the launch is happening on the book at the Book Lounge on the 11th of October. Plus, Martina's taking part in next month's Open Book Festival. So don't forget to go and book your tickets, openbookfestival.co.za. But for now, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome to the show Martina Dalmans.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
This is so great that you're here.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the book.
Well, thank you.
It's an achievement, hey?
Well, it's still a bit unreal.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, the book has only been printed like 3 days ago.
Have you held a copy in your hands yet?
I haven't even. So I think until I hold that copy, it's just going to be, not real.
Prepare yourself for the snowball effect of madness.
Yeah.
Why did you want to write a book?
I didn't. I really didn't. So I started that that course, the nonfiction writing course, and really just for me to explore writing a little bit more. I've loved writing my whole life. So literally, writing was my to-go place. So whenever I felt questions about something, insecure, confused, alone, I write. And so I thought, let me see where this goes. Maybe I can write something more. Mm. And I started this course, and it turned out, I crawled from deadline to deadline, because this is clearly my process. Mm. And then at the end of 2 years, suddenly I had this thing that literally grew and came out as a book. So,
and here it is.
And here it is, yeah.
The way that you've written, and we'll explore, there's so much to explore, but the way that you've written it is, it's like a letter to your kids, to your three kids. And your kids are black, you are white, clearly, obviously. And just talk a little bit about why you wrote it in that way, as a kind of, as a letter to them.
Okay, so as I said, so writing for me was always self-expression. Mm. I think it was the only place where I could really be myself. So when I started writing for that class, I realized I need somebody to talk to. Mm. I can't just tell a story into a void or into some person or people that I don't even know. And then suddenly it was very natural. Like, who do I want to tell my story to? And I thought, no, the only people I want to tell that story to is my kids. Mm. And especially in the context of them not being born to me and possibly having questions at a time when I can't answer them anymore. Mm. So I thought, like, to let them know a little bit more about how we happened. Mm. So how we became a family, who I was before they came to me, and how this whole beautiful story came together.
I think this is the most beautiful gift that a parent can give their child, particularly adopted children, who, you know, this sense that so much of our identity is called into question as adoptees. Mm. So to have something literally in black and white that will form part of the jigsaw of their lives is the most beautiful thing. Mm.
Yeah, so that was what I sort of held in mind the whole time while I was writing this. So the mother that they know is not the full story. Mm. So how and of course they're asking me now, but the answers I give them now might not be the same answers that they would want when they're 30, 40, 50.
How old will they have to be before they get to read a copy?
No, they got to read it. I had to. I mean, like, I
how old are they?
They are 12, 10, and 6.
Okay.
So two of them are really not interested. They're like, okay, whatever. You're writing
Mom.
A book.
Yeah.
Am I in it? Okay, cool. and my son really wanted to know. So I read him all the parts where he's in, and the tricky part was that already within the whole process. So I started about 3 years ago, and now literally a week before the book got printed, he decided, no, actually, I don't want this information about me to be out. So I had to rewrite whole chapters, And
so what I've read here, because I've got an advanced copy, this won't be what gets put out, maybe.
When did you get the copy?
About 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, that is not exactly what's going to come out, yeah.
Good for you for honouring that, though.
Yeah, I had to. And I still know that what I've written now, they might still not like it or hold it against me in 10, 20 years' time. So the tricky part was, what part of their story can I tell them without infringing on their story? And I could only make the decision that seemed right for me at the time.
That's a very conscious thing to do that. I've found with a lot of adoptive parents that they have a sense that their child's story is theirs.
Oh, of course not.
To do with as they want. I've been horrified looking on Facebook and seeing sort of details that aren't really anybody else's business. And it feeds into that idea of adopted children as property.
Yeah, so that was obviously never, ever any notion that I had a right to their story or that anybody else had a right to their story. But in wanting me to tell their story, there was, before I even had the thought that it would be published, because I didn't have that thought until about a year ago, I wanted to include everything I knew, also about their birth families. And I know some things. And then when it was suddenly more real that the book gets published, I had to rethink. So what are the parts that I need to take out? What are the parts that I can write? But also what are the parts that are actually important? Because what is the purpose of this book being out there? So and if the purpose is for some people to be able to relate, some of the information might be quite important. So it's a tricky balance, and I don't know if I got it right.
I think you got it right.
Well, thanks. But we'll see.
I think you got it right.
We'll see what I hear in 10 years' time.
If you are just joining us, Martina Dalmans is my guest in studio. She's the author of a soon-to-be-released memoir. It's, I think, a hugely important book. It's called A Person, My Colour, Love, Adoption and Parenting While White. And it tells of Martina's experience of being a white adoptive mother to children who are black. And, of course, with my own story, I've been absolutely fascinated by hearing Martina's side of things. And I introduced you in the introduction as being woke, which is not a term that it's a term that the kids use, but I have to say you speak so honestly about how initially when you adopted your kids, the fact that they were black wasn't really an issue to you, and why you now see that as a problem, and you highlight the idea of colour blindness. Talk to me about your discovery of colour blindness and why you now see it as a problem and what you understand by colour blindness.
Yeah, so it was my default place, colour blindness. I mean, I maybe also because I grew up in Germany, I wasn't really so clued up about the dynamics here. And then when I moved here, I was in entirely white circles.
You refused to move here you refused to visit here until Mandela.
So that
had been
was
released.
The thing. My brother was a doctor here for many, many years. So the one knowledge that we had in Germany about South Africa was you don't go there. It's horrible, it's apartheid, they put Nelson Mandela in jail. But that was literally all I knew.
Sure.
And of course, consciously, we're all not racists, right? Yeah. So we all not for oppression. We all don't think we're better. But all the other stuff that has been sort of put into us from birth, and especially living in an all-white community in Germany, that stuff never comes out. And that translates into thoughts like, yeah, well, we're adopting. Doesn't matter, black, white, pink, green. Like, we love our kid and all is going to be fine. And that's because we don't know about the issues. We don't know what we don't know. And we don't know what nobody has told us. And even sitting here in the middle of what we don't know, it's still the others it happens to. So our kids will be ours. And I only got to realize that after the fact.
Yeah. So, which is, I think, true for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of parents who've adopted trans.
Yeah, I think today maybe that was about 13 years ago. Mm. And in the whole process, not a single person mentioned race.
They did ask you quite strange questions, though. One of the questions was, what type of hair would you like your child to have? Straight, curly, or something else?
Yeah, and that totally threw me because I had no idea what that question meant. And I was like, how the hell do they know what color, what type of hair child comes out? And then yeah, Alan clued me in and he said, look, actually, no, it means, curly means black, straight means white.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, that's a bit odd. Yeah, so, but really, that was the extent to which race was mentioned. But then you had psychological evaluation, meetings with social workers. There were all sorts of stuff going on around the adoption, but to whatever you were alerted, never to the fact that you're transracially adopting.
So, and I'm fascinated by this. In the process, and you must meet social worker after social worker, or maybe just the same one many, many times, was there no discussion about, okay, so you might get a black child and therefore you're going to have to do some, you're going to have to get a bit clued up about...
No. I don't think that was the narrative at the time. Mm. The narrative at the time was... You're going to get a black child, and that black child is going to be lucky.
Yeah.
And we're going to get, going to benefit from all the privilege that you have. Mm. And you're going to love that child. Good for everybody.
Yeah, good for everybody. Exactly. So now when you think about color blindness, how do you check, or do you, that you are not being colorblind in any given situation, or is it just not a, it's not even a thing?
No, it is a very conscious thing. I mean, none of us are, but we like to pretend so that we don't have to face certain issues. Mm. Like, and that doesn't only apply to children, that applies to
sure.
meeting up with friends. And if we have a black friend, I'm talking about me at the beginning of this whole discovery almost. It's uncomfortable to go there. It's uncomfortable to ask somebody how they feel in their reality. It's uncomfortable to acknowledge certain things that go on when you go out together in public and you realize people get treated differently, but how do you even start talking about this?
Mm.
And there has to be a certain connection in order to bring these things up with adults. And as far as kids go, there's just no way that I cannot talk about this with my kids. So we started having this conversation from when they could talk.
When you look back at the time before you had adopted it and when you had just adopted your first child, and you look back at who you were then, a kind of under a, and I use the term kindly, but ignorant, essentially,
yes.
as to these issues.
Absolutely.
What do you think now? Do you think, oh God, how mortifying?
I'm embarrassed.
Are you?
I'm totally embarrassed. Mm. I'm embarrassed, but at the same time, I also think maybe it's not such a bad thing, because if I could get from there to here, there's no reason why other people can't do this.
Mm. Do you think it's a choice that people make as to whether they're going to or whether they're not going to?
I think so. I think maybe not in such concrete words, but there are definitely moments in every person parenting a black child where you can either ignore what's happening or where you can go, actually, no, this is not right. I need to look what's going on here. I need to acknowledge this. I need to think about this. I need to address it. I need to educate myself. Or you can go, oh, it's not so bad. All will be fine.
Mm. Mm. There's a point in the book at which you, I don't know if it's your son or your daughter who says, could people my colour ever drive a car like this? They were looking at a BMW
or
something.
That's when the whole thing started. That's literally when the whole thing started. This is also where the title comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was literally, I think she was maybe three. And I think I was still totally oblivious to most of the stuff. And Ellen went out with her and came back deeply shaken. I said, what happened? Yeah, we went to the car wash and you can't believe what she said. She asked me, can a person my color ever drive a fancy car? And I was just, I think that was a moment where my world crumbled. And I didn't know what to do. I really did not know what to do because what people tell you is kids don't see color, right? You hear this all the time. What we tell them when they ask us things, no, you're beautiful, your skin is beautiful, your hair is beautiful, we love how you look. We find them even books. And the reality is they don't, for them, what you say is not what they learn, but what they see. And what my daughter saw is us living in a white neighborhood, white people driving fancy cars, the black people being in service. And I don't think she's ever seen a black person driving a car.
Sure.
At the age of 3. And for some reason, it until that time, it also never really occurred to me.
It's really quite difficult, isn't it? I mean, that floors me completely. That completely floors me. And I relate so much. And it's so important what you're saying about it doesn't matter that we can say, oh, but darling, I love your hair. I've got, you know, people that I know who've adopted transracially and they say, oh, you know, she wants to know why she can't have peach skin like mummy. And I tell her, oh, but I love your skin. And that's the end of the conversation. Or, oh, I want my hair to be. And this is what I used to say to my mom. I wish my hair was like yours. All I wanted when I was 6 years old was to have swingy long hair that I could tie up in a thing. There were no black kids at the school that I went to. I don't think I saw a black person outside of the television until I was probably about 12 or 13 years old. And so to have that hit you like that as a parent, where do you go from there? Because it must be important to you then, okay, we need to make sure that the people that, or the society that we choose to be around, is reflective of people that my daughter will be able to see, and not just people in service. This is the thing I see so many parents often talking about. Well, you know, we've asked our domestic worker how to do her hair, or, you know, we've asked our domestic worker only to speak Xhosa to her. And it's like, yeah, but you are missing this by a country mile. The fact that it's still this idea, this hierarchy, and that the only person of color that is a mirror for your child is somebody who is in service to you.
Exactly. So I realized that pretty much from that moment on. I think there have been signs before, so I think there was an unease there anyway. Otherwise it might not have devastated me so. And I realized that I basically needed to change our entire life. And I started by stalking black people.
Amazing. So, yeah, okay.
So I really, whenever I was somewhere, I was studying at the time, whether it was college or at a party, the lone black person, I was there talking to that person, trying to just form a connection, sort of like, find out something. I didn't even know what I wanted to find out.
Yeah.
And then I think when I joined the group, that was pretty soon after, then things started happening.
Talk about this group that you joined.
So it's called This Dialogue Thing, and it was started by a friend of mine like a few months before I joined. And the intent at the time was to create a diverse, I'm doing the quotation marks, group of women to talk about race. It's a huge subject. But that's how it started. And that's what really drew me in, is knowing that I needed to know something, but I didn't as such know what I needed to know. And I was also on international adoption Facebook platforms. I had contacted an author, Precious Williams, who wrote a book, and I was sort of in touch with her. So I was like really just trying to find my way and to find answers anywhere. And most of all, I knew I wanted role models around my kids, people that they could relate to, people who looked like them, and people they could look up to.
Mm.
And that's, yeah, that was my journey from then on.
You haven't written the book alone. You've also got somebody else who's contributed to the book, Tumi Mpofu Jonas.
Mm.
How did that connection come about?
So we met at the dialogue group, right? And, well, I was stalking her for a bit.
Yeah.
And we really became friends. We became close friends. And and halfway through writing the book, I asked her, said, like, to read some of the chapters, to just also verify, especially the chapters about the dialogue, was it like that? And then I asked her, how about you write how it was for you, especially because she has such a close relationship with my kids, and they really love her, and she's so important in their lives. And we just thought at the time it wasn't intended as a book to be published. So at the time it was a project that I did for the kids. So I invited her in there and said, well, you know them, they know you, you love them. So give them your perspective on this, because someday they might want to know. And that's how it came about. And I'm so glad and so grateful that she agreed, and she wrote these really great, wonderful chapters.
I mean, I want people to go and buy the book. I'm still working my way through it. And as you can, it's been really emotional. I mean, it's an emotional book, full stop. But I think it's even more emotional if you have some connection to adoption. When is it coming out officially, that people can actually buy it?
I don't know.
Well, it's going to have to be before the 11th of October.
No, it's going to have to be before the...
It's going to be before open the, book.
Yeah, I think the first panel happens on the 6th of September.
Okay.
And that's, I think, normally when the book is available, isn't it?
Yeah, I would have
Should
thought
be.
So.
Yeah, so I think it will be then available then.
The book is called A Person, My Colour, Love, Adoption and Parenting, and it's by Love, Adoption and Parenting While White, and it's by my book club guest this evening, Martina Dalmans, who is the author, and it essentially tells, it's her story, and it tells the story of her and how she came to be the adoptive mother of three black kids. So, just talk to me. I mean, I know that the dialogue group, and I don't want to give too much away, and I've kind of just got there in the book, and it's quite full on.
Mm.
Knowing what you know now, how do you feel about the next few years of parenting your children? Are you confident? Are you more confident now than you would have been back then? Because at the end of the day, you're not black and you never will
mm-mm,
be.
Mm-mm.
However, and there is a big however.
Mm. I think, weirdly enough, I was probably more confident when I started.
Hmm.
And, yeah, I'm very conscious about my shortcomings now. I wouldn't say that I think I'm not cut out to be their mom, but I think there is always an underlying sense of the difference of our experiences.
Mm.
And the way for me to bridge that is by exposing us as a family to situations where they feel more at home and where I sometimes am the odd one out.
Mm.
So, and we just had a a great trip. We drove 4 days, 2 days there, 2 days back, to a wedding of a friend of mine, a traditional Zulu wedding.
Mm.
And my partner and I were the only white people. And my son was loving it. He just looked at me and goes, now you know how I feel.
Did he really?
Yeah. Well, more also in a joke.
Yeah.
You know, so because we often have situations now, luckily, where in our house, where Ellen and I are the only white people. And my kids, it's not something that they're not used to.
Yeah.
But this was a wedding, like 200 people. And for me also to realize it was quite interesting, the pressure I felt under.
Hmm.
Like not only to present myself with these kids, so now the hair had to be extra.
Yeah.
Right? And and the way I interacted with them, I felt on the spot.
Hmm.
And funnily enough, also my youngest daughter, she disappeared straight away. She didn't even want to have anything to do with me. And that was the funniest thing. I must tell you that story. So she ran off with a group of kids. It was quite late in the evening. We needed to go. We had driven all day, and we needed to find the place. We still didn't know where we would sleep. So I was trying to get her. So I came into the room. There she was with like 10 other kids around this next table. They're throwing chips in her face. And she knows she's not supposed to eat chips, right? So we just locked eyes, and I was like, come, we need to go. And she's like, turns around as if I was talking to somebody else. And I said, hey, come, we need to go. So and then I was like a little bit louder probably. Mm. So this other little kid next to us goes, who's that lady? And she looks at me like, I don't know.
Wow.
So it's me backpedaling out of the room, getting my friend and say, you get it, you got to get my kid for me.
Wow.
Because I was literally not able to get her out of there. And it was great. I mean, it was a great moment.
I think what you're doing, I mean, you know, and I say this really passionately because I have had, since putting my book out there, I've had some parents, of which you have been one, being adoptive parents, parents who've adopted transracially, who have been so supportive and have been so wonderful and have said, thank you so much, or whatever it is. And other people, I'm sure, want to throw me to the lions. Mm. And that's okay. That's okay. But something that I was wondering, and I said this to you before we came on air, is that I'm wondering how your book will be viewed, because a lot of the opinions that you, in the wider South African adoption community where parents have adopted transracially, because a lot of the views that you hold are very similar to the views that I hold and around adoption and around identity and being consciously parenting as an adoptive parent of black children. I'm wondering how you will be received and whether you care or whether you don't care how you're received.
Well, I would like to say I don't care, but I haven't really been out there. So I think the reality of what it would feel like if people are openly hostile might still be hurtful. Mm. I don't know. But then again, I'm also quite outspoken. So I think it would be like my rebellious nature would fight with my need to be loved.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, like, I'm not going to like change my views or change my opinions. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that I'm ashamed of or embarrassed about. Even the dumb shit that I did.
Yeah.
You know, it just like, It was a part of a learning.
Absolutely.
And I'm hoping that this sort of also shows that it's not something that comes naturally to any white person.
Mm.
You have to make a conscious effort. You have to work for it. You have to, I don't know what to do to somehow muddle your way through this.
Do you have any fears about what happens when your kids get to kind of 18, 19 and they're young? They're young black people, and perhaps they've got more of an awareness of how South Africa is, the history of the country, and how they might view you differently as a white person, not as mom.
No, funnily enough, not, because they do it already.
Okay.
my little one calls me racist when I want to put her to bed, so that's fine. So I'm not scared of that.
Okay.
No,
I don't want to force this. If you're not, you're not. But conversations, because there are and I say this because there was a point at which I came into my blackness, and I think that was probably when I came back to South Africa, really. And there are conversations around my black identity and what that means to me as a black South African that I haven't been able to. And this is again my experience. I haven't been able to have with my adoptive mom, as much as I love her, I wouldn't say she's as woke as you are. But these are conversations that I haven't felt able to have. But it seems to me that you're laying a platform, a foundation where your kids would be able to have those conversations
well,
with you.
Maybe, but maybe not. And I'm pretty sure there are lots of conversations that they can't and shouldn't have with me.
Hmm.
And this is why we need people around who they can have these conversations with, because I might not be able to contribute to a lot of that stuff because that's not my experience. I can maybe give an opinion or empathize, but there are people that are much better equipped for these kinds of conversations than I am. But that's not what's scaring me. I mean, that's obviously on an emotional level. That is, I think, for every mother, that is just, it's a pain not to be able to relate to a child.
Mm.
But I think it's just more obvious when you have a black child. I think even a white mother with a white child would at some point have come to realize we are different. Mm. There's are different experiences. It's just that it's multiplied by I don't know how much with having a black child.
Mm. Mm. I celebrate you. I think it's fantastic. I'm so glad that you've written this book and I'm enjoying it. I can't wait to do the launch with you on, when did I say it was? October the 11th. My guest is Martina Dalmans. The book is called A Person My Colour, Love, Adoption and Parenting While White. And Martina will be taking part in the Open Book Festival, which is coming up in a couple of weeks already. And you can book your tickets at openbookfestival.co.za. Thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you in.
Oh, thank you so much.